ओम के निधन नंदस्यां सनातन सनकाय श्री हरि नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोविस्तम स्थापितम Yesterday we were reading from the 28th chapter of the Krishna book, which is also the 28th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. In that chapter, Krishna comes to the rescue of his father, who is taken by the servants of Varunadev to the kingdom of Varunadev. And he goes to bathe. Nanda Maharaj always observed Ekadasi very, very carefully. And he went to bathe in the Yamuna as part of his breaking of the Ekadasi. This was directly following Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill for 7 days, and then he put down the hill, and then on the following Ekadasi, which was just a few days after, because Krishna held the hill for 7 days, then a few days after Nanda Maharaj observed Ekadasi, and then to break the Ekadasi, he bathed in the Yamuna, and that place where he bathed is still, near the place where he bathed, is still present. That place is still present, and the village surrounding it is called Nandagat, and we visited that. And I didn't go into the temple in there, but I visited that place. The Yamuna it's moved some since then. So one may wonder why the name of the village is Nanda Ghat. It is described in Bhaktiratnakara that the great grandson of Krishna, whose name was Vrindanava, that when Dwarka was destroyed by the ocean, just after the departure of Krishna from this planet. Krishna, just before he left this world, this is an incredible description of this in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. When Krishna left, he was shot, not actually, but part of the pastime, he was shot in the heel by a hunter who was actually an incarnation of Bhrigu Muni. He was shot, and the arrow that he had at the end of the arrow the piece of iron that was remaining after King Ugrasena ground up all the pieces of an iron shaft. Oh, it's a long story. I have to start at the beginning. That the members of the Yadu dynasty, the children, the younger members of the Yadu dynasty, there were some sages, including Narada Muni and other sages, and they decided to tease the sages. So one should not tease sages. One should only be respectful to sages. So they were a little, because they were boys and because they were Krishna's own descendants, they dressed up Sambha. Sambha was very, very beautiful. And he was Sa Amba. He was always with his mother. He was his mother's pet. And they dressed him up in a sari. And they went to the sages, and they placed some kind of a pillow or something in her stomach, under the sari, and they went to the sages and said, "Oh, will this girl give birth to a boy or a girl?" they teased the sages in this way, trying to trick them. So the sages became quite upset, including Narada Muni, and they said, she will give birth to something that will be the destruction of the Yadu dynasty, the cause of destruction of the Yadu dynasty. So they were struck with, they were struck and frightened, and then they looked and saw beneath the cloth, where there had been just some cloth before, there was now an iron club. So they were quite terrified by this. So they, without telling Krishna, because they were too embarrassed, they didn't tell their father, but they went to their great-grandfather, Ugrasena. And, they went to the king, and they told him what had happened, and he just minimized it and didn't want to cause them any fear. So he said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. So he took that iron piece and had it ground into fine powder. And he took that fine powder and threw it into the ocean. Now when you're grinding iron, you can't grind the last bit because you have to hold it as you're grinding it. So that last bit was also thrown into the ocean. And the powder, iron filings, the powder, it washed up on the shore of Prabhas, Prabhachetra, which is in what province of India? Gujarat, yes. You've been there?
Yes.
We've been there. And those iron filings grew like bamboo, but they were very, very hard. So this is all described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the beginning of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And then, at the same time, the demigods, all the devatas, came to Krishna and Dwarka, and Lord Brahma spoke to Krishna and said, you've completed the purpose of your pastimes. Because what is it that causes Krishna to come to this world? Sambhavam yapma mayaya. He comes by his own desire, by his own maya, by his own energy. We are forced to take birth in a particular situation with a particular, by our karma, by our karmana daiva netrena, under the supervision of daiva, of fate or the Supreme Lord, according to our karma, we take a particular birth, have a particular body, born in a particular family, a particular place. We don't have any choice. We are forced by the laws of nature. But what are the laws that can force the one who has created the laws? He is above the law. He is the creator. He is all powerful. So Krishna is not forced to take his birth, but rather sambhavam yapmamaya. He takes it by his own desire, or under the influence of not Krishna's illusory energy maya, but Krishna's own internal energy, yoga maya. So Krishna comes, and Brahma told him that the purpose of your coming was some dharma samskapanataya, to reestablish the principles of religion, and pritranaya sadhunam, to protect the devotees, vinasha to dispute, and to annihilate, basically speaking, the demonic. So Brahma told him that your purpose has been fulfilled. Your mission, the purpose of your incarnation, of your avatar, is now fulfilled. So if you want, you can leave now. It's your time to leave. Because from the point of view of Lord Brahma, because they couldn't participate very much in Krishna's pastimes, and they knew Krishna's pastimes went from planet to planet, universe to universe. It wasn't a big thing to suggest that Krishna would leave, but for the devotees of Krishna who were associating with him, and for the earth, it was the most horrendous thought that Krishna would leave. But in any case, Krishna accepted this. And then very soon after that, this incident took place with the cursing of the Yadu dynasty. That this club, so everything, the scene was being set for Krishna's departure. So Krishna, so bad omens started occurring in Dwarka. And again, this is mentioned in the first several chapters of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. So some bad omens began to take place in Dwarka. And all the residents of Dwarka became quite frightened, and they asked Krishna what to do. And Krishna said, we should all go to Prabhachetra and perform a sacrifice, and thereby the ill effect of bad omens, these bad omens will be overtaken. So after Krishna made that pronouncement, Uddhava, Krishna's dear friend, who is the best of the devotees in the Yadu dynasty, he came to Krishna, because Uddhava was very intelligent. So he said, my dear Lord, I can tell by what's going on, or rather I have a conjecture that by what's going on, I think that you are planning to leave and your pastimes here and leave this world. And I have a request for you. Please don't leave me here. Don't leave me here without you. Because the great devotees, they cannot tolerate being separate from Krishna. We are separate from Krishna in a practical sense, because Krishna is the absolute truth, the Param Satyam. There is nothing external to him. And in a real sense, in a philosophical sense, in a tattva sense, we can never be separated from Krishna. It's not possible, because we are Krishna's. Mama eva angsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Mama eva angsa. We're Krishna's part. And his part, so we cannot be separated from him. But in a practical sense, we are separated from Krishna by consciousness. Krishna bhule se jeev anadi bahimukh. We turn our back on Krishna. So this separation from Krishna and consciousness, this consciously turning our back on Krishna, is the situation of every conditioned soul in the material world. And although we are separate from Krishna in a practical sense, we don't mind. We have turned our back on him, and we're happy to do that. We want to. We have our own plans, our own ideas. We have our own concept that's based on ourselves being the enjoyer. And Krishna very kindly stays aloof from the conditioned soul's plans for enjoyment. And there are so many different species of life, and you always look. You can look in the world. You can say in if you, even if you go to India, there's so many people, 1 billion. How many? 300,000, 300 million. But no one knows, of course, really how many, right? Where are you from? I know that. I figured out, even without an astrologer. But what part of India?
Central India, Madhya Pradesh.
You told me before. Not Bhopal, but where?
Indore,
yes. Yeah, oh, that's right, and I've been there, yes. Yes, and I remember telling you that actually, and telling you it's this Gita Jayanti place where Prabhupada, and you had visited, and you've been there too, if I remember. So, Ujjain, yeah. Ujjain's old name is Avantipur. Did you know that? So even in India, even with the 1 billion plus people, there's no one who looks exactly the same. We can say everyone's Indian, but no one looks exactly the same, because everyone has their individual karma, and we're pushed into a particular body and situation by our karma. But there is one thing everyone has in common, that everyone has their plan. of what they're going to do, to situate themselves to become happy without Krishna. And maybe Krishna is there too, but the central player is ourselves. This is what it means to be a conditioned soul. For a pious person, they want to have God there, but they don't think of God or the Ishwara or the Parameshwara as the center, but rather they think either his position is to fulfill my desires and someone to go to when I'm in difficulty, or just to do something so he doesn't become angry at me and drop a piano on my head or something. And that will really cause me trouble, get in the way of all my plans. So this is how people think, even if they're pious and God is part of their plans, they have him in a subordinate role to the main star, who is me. Of course, I'm not, but that's how I think of myself. So Krishna, the time for him to leave. So we're separate from Krishna by consciousness, but the devotees who are with Krishna, perform pastimes with Krishna, that's the most intolerable thing for them. They can tolerate anything, but they can't tolerate separation from Krishna. It is so painful. It's the nature of the intensity of their spiritual love. We are separate from Krishna, but we don't really care. So Uddhava came to Krishna and said, "My dear Lord, you're leaving. This is my conjecture. This is my inference. I've inferred this from what's going on. And please do not leave me without you. Please take me with you. Don't let me stay in this world separate from you." If we understood that Krishna was leaving, we were there, we'd say probably something like, "Krishna, you're leaving. Do you think you could leave me one of your palaces or something, or at least a few chariots or whatever, and some of the treasury?" This is the nature of a conditioned soul. It's so self-centered. At least one palace. A small one, okay, but at least a palace.
At least some of the treasury.
At least some of the treasury or something. I mean, you can't take it with you, you know. Preach to him a little bit.
I'd use it wisely.
Yeah. So Uddhava was not in that mood. He said, "My existence in this world has no meaning. It will be so painful without your association." Because he was used to seeing Krishna every day. So Krishna, in turn, when Uddhava pleaded like this, Krishna said, "I have some service for you to do. I want you to stay here and do some service." So Uddhava said, "How can I live in this world without you and without becoming entangled in the complexities of the illusory energy?" So Krishna spoke to him many wonderful instructions at that time on many different levels. And they are known as the Uddhava Gita. So after Krishna spoke these instructions, and these are all in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, quite explains karma, jnana, yoga, etc. Then after that, Uddhava leaves to serve Krishna. He didn't go directly, but Krishna wanted it. He had a mission to bring for Uddhava to carry him his message to the sages in Badrikashram. Raise your hand if you've been to Badrikashram. That one.
The one in the mountains.
That's also in the mountains, but the one that's high in the Himalayas. I was there. And in the temple there, there is a deity of Uddhava. There to this day. And you cross the Alakanand River and you go into the temple. But in any case, so after that, Krishna's pastime continued, and all the members of the Yadu dynasty went to Prabhachetra. And there, while Krishna was there, there's a tree that's still there, which is near the Somnath deity, Somnath temple. There's a tree called Balki Tirtha, that's the place called, where the hunter was said to be, a hunter who was the incarnation of Bhrigu Muni. He shot his arrow and he pierced Krishna. And then it was time, this was Krishna's pastime, and then Uddhava came back to see Krishna, and Maitreya Muni was there. It's actually an incredible pastime. And it's also described in the first part of it is described in the third and fourth canto of the Bhagavatam as well. So, in any case, when it was time for Krishna to leave, all the demigods were in their heavenly plant, they were in their airplanes, and Krishna was leaving, and they were all trying to get Krishna to stop in their planets on the way out of when he was leaving the universe. And it's actually, on one level, looking at it from the point of view of the residents of Earth, it was the most sad pastime, and the devotees don't like to discuss it. But looking at it from the point of view of the demigods, they were seeing it quite differently. They were thinking this is the greatest opportunity, like a great man is there. And he said, please come to my house, please come to my house, please come to my house. And they were vying, competing to get Krishna to come to their planet on his way out of the universe. And so it was quite glorious, quite an amazing end to Krishna's pastimes in this world. But before he left, he called for Daruka, his chariot driver. And he told Daruka, as soon as he called for Daruka, Daruka came and he gave him an instruction. He told him that in 3 days from now, the entire city of Dwarka will be over the ocean, because it's built in the ocean, it will be overcome by the ocean. So before that happens, I want you to tell Arjun, who was there visiting Krishna at that time, to take all my queens out before this great destruction takes place. And also Arjuna should come out, and also immediately a few other members of the outer dynasty should leave. And one of those other members of the dynasty was Brajanav, the great grandson of Krishna, who was the son of Aniruddha. So the reason why I was telling you this is how Nanda got its name, the village, is because when Brajanav came, when he left, he was installed as the king of Mathura. And the first thing he did, practically speaking, as the king of Mathura, he went around to Vrindavan, to all the places in Vrindavan, and he heard from all the people in Vrindavan who were still present where the places where Krishna performed his pastimes were. Krishna did this here, and here is Govardhan Hill. He heard everything. And he named all the villages after the places of Krishna's pastimes. And he also had certain deities carved and of Krishna. And still on the planet was the mother of Maharaj Prickett, whose name was Uttara. And she was the last person remaining on the planet at some point who had actually seen Krishna, because she was a young girl married to the Pandava prince Abhimanyu, who everyone knows very well from it used to be in olden days. It used to be everyone knows about Abhimanyu because your grandmother told you the stories when you're young, but nowadays it's everyone knows because they've seen the Mahabharata videos. Have you seen the Mahabharata videos? Have you seen the Mahabharata? Have you seen them? That's how everyone knows. No more grandmother. The job of grandmothers is taken by the job of the one-eyed guru, the television. But in the old days, this is how the tradition was passed down always. Did your grandmother tell you these pastimes too?
I did not have opportunity to.
You? She told you the stories? Mm-hmm. You? She passed away?
Before I
was
born.
Oh. You? Did your grandmother tell you the stories of Mahabharata and Ramayana? This is the culture. So that's how the village of Nandagata got its name. So something very wonderful happened in Nandagata, in that village. And we told the pastime yesterday, as it is, we read it in the Krishna book. But today we'll tell it in a little more detail, in a little different way, this pastime. Wonderful pastime. As Srila Jiva Goswami describes it in Gopal Champu. And it's interesting how each of the different acharyas on these pastimes, usually the pastimes are described in such a way that they're more or less the same, and different acharyas give details. But in this pastime and the one following it, as Krishna willingly so described tomorrow, there's some difference in some of the conclusions, actually. But they're mostly details. So in any case, when Nanda Maharaj, who always followed Ekadasi, he went to bathe in the Yamuna, and he was taken by the servants of Varuna Dev to the abode of Varuna through a great tunnel coming from the Yamuna to Varuna Loka. And actually, Yadashresha Prabhu was correct. I checked, the abode of Varuna Dev is very close to Patala Loka. It's lower part, lower by the lower planetary systems, by Rasatala planets. So through this tunnel, are you still attracted to go?
No.
No. You know that saying, let's not go there.
It's sort of something I hear about that. You often people
will just get the tour through the Krishna book. Huh?
Vamana Dev went down there, didn't he?
Vamana Dev. That's, yeah. He went to a different Sutala.
Sutala.
To be the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj, his great devotee. So Nanda Maharaj entered the water, and his servants, or his associates, the Gopa friends of his, they didn't have their mobile phones with them. So they couldn't call Nanda Maharaj to find out how he was doing. Rather, they went into the water to search for him. And they couldn't find him, and they were completely distraught. So Kavi Kanapur describes how they went back to Vrindavan very quickly to tell Krishna and Balaram. But other acharyas, Srila Prabhupada also explains it here, say that they just called out to Krishna and Balaram, and Krishna and Balaram immediately came. Krishna came immediately. So Srila Jiva Goswami describes how the servants told Krishna, and Krishna told Balaram to stay with Mother Yasoda and assure her that soon he's going to come back with Nanda Maharaj. And because Mother Yasoda would have been, her love was so full of Krishna, she would have left this body. She could not tolerate being alive if some problem was happening to Krishna, because Krishna was everything to her. She was everything. She had no thought that was not filled with love for Krishna. You know, darling. And Nanda Maharaj also. So Balaram stayed to pacify her. And Rohini Devi, the mother of Balaram, started chastising Balaram a little bit, and Balaram got angry at her and said, don't chastise me for letting Krishna go. You take care of your soda. You help me with your soda. This is what Krishna wants us to do. So Krishna went to the, and yesterday we heard about the separation of Srimati Radharani and all the gopis. And Sri Kavi Kanapur says that those who say that Krishna went to Varuna Loka and Srimati Radharani stayed behind, they are completely wrong. Because when Krishna left, Srimati Radharani's life heirs always stayed with Krishna. In other words, when Krishna wasn't present, basically Srimati Radharani wasn't in consciousness. So this is the love of the residents of Vrindavan. It's so complete. It's all for Krishna. Krishna is the center. Krishna is the star. And everyone just simply wants to serve him. And why? Not because they have to. Not because the Shastra says, the scriptures say, they want to serve him out of their natural, spontaneous love for him. This is Vrindavan. And we heard yesterday how one intelligent gopi, to keep Srimati Radharani alive, she said, Krishna's back, Krishna's returned, Krishna's returned. He'll be back in a and then when he was, then she opened her eyes and Krishna wasn't there, and she became so stunned with her eyes open. She didn't say anything, didn't move, didn't do anything. And then one gopi said, he'll be back in a moment. And she said, and Srimati Radharani replied, what good is that for me? A moment's separation from Krishna is like a yuga. So that wasn't any consolation for her at all. There wasn't any, oh, he'll be back in a moment, then it's okay. No, this is the love of the residents of Vrindavan. So Krishna entered into the water, but he was so angry. And he assumed a form that his dark complexion became reddish in his anger. And his eyes became like lightning. So his dark complexion became like a cloud that was full of the heat of the sun. So it became reddish. And then his eyes became like lightning, that no one could look at them. He was so angry. And his voice was as deep as thunder. So Srila Jiva Goswami compares Krishna's mood and his anger, because his father had been taken by Varunadev to the clouds, to lightning and thunder, all at once. So it was a storm of anger. So somehow or another, amazingly enough, Krishna was consciously deciding to give his mercy to Varuna, although Varuna had done something horrible, taking his father. But still, somehow or another, Krishna decided to shower the mercy of his beautiful presence upon him. So he went there in that form. And at the same time, Srila Jiva Goswami describes Nanda Maharaj as only thinking about his Lord Narayan during this time, and only thinking about his son Krishna, to such a degree he was thinking, my son Krishna is so wonderful, His eyes were closed in meditation on Krishna. Krishna is so wonderful. He killed Trinavarta. He did this. He goes out. He herds the cows. He's so beautiful. Everyone loves Krishna. He did this. So his consciousness was completely enwrapped on Krishna with his eyes closed. He wasn't even aware that he was in a difficult position, being brought before the servants, before Varuna, by the servants of Varuna. And it could have meant his death, say. So he wasn't, he was just thinking about Krishna and his worshipable deity, Narayan. Narayana Samo Gunai. So that was Nanda Maharaj's consciousness. But Varunadev, when he saw auspicious Nanda Maharaj in front of him, he immediately recognized, due to the physiognomy, due to the piety of his face and his features, he recognized that this is the father of Krishna. And Krishna, my master, is going to be so angry that we've taken his father. So he became filled with fear. So he immediately took Nanda Maharaj and placed him on his throne, on a throne, and gave him many presentations. And at the same time, he went outside of his palace, outside of his kingdom, because he knew that Krishna would not tolerate this. And he would be angry. So he went to meet Krishna outside. So when Krishna started coming, no one could look at him because he was in this powerful, reddish, angry, lightning, thunderous voice. Everything was going on, and he approached immediately the kingdom of Varunadev, and he was calling out in his thunderous voice, "You jackal Varuna, in what hole are you hiding?" Again and again. And Varuna was just, he was terrified, and he tied some cloth around his neck in his humility, and he put his hands above his head. He was bowing down. He began saying, "Oh, Krishna, just see, your father is right here. He's well taken care of. He's sitting on the throne. Just see him over there." And he began to offer prayers to Krishna. "Oh, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the Supreme Lord." And he was glorifying Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And somehow or another, his father understood. He heard the prayers of Varunadev. And when he was bowing down to Krishna, Krishna saw his father, and he saw the humble mood. "Please forgive me for the mistakes of my servants, these foolish persons. Look what they have done." And he was so repentant for what had happened that Krishna's anger cooled down immediately. And he said, "Please take me to my father." So Varunadev took Krishna in front of Nanda Maharaj, whose eyes were completely closed in his meditation on Krishna. But then Nanda Maharaj perceived the fragrance of Krishna, and his eyes slowly opened, and he understood where he didn't understand where he was or how he got there. Because he had just been thinking of Krishna. And his eyes opened, and he saw Krishna standing in front of him. Krishna said to him, "Father, I have come. Please, take the two lotuses at your feet and place them on the pathway. We are going home." And actually, Varunadev had taken a red carpet, and placed it on the path for Krishna to walk to his father. He had done everything so carefully after his great mistake. So Nanda Maharaj and Krishna were accompanied by Varunadev, who was saying prayers, and all his servants, and given one, and he told Krishna, you please, what gifts do you want? You please, I have all so many riches in the ocean. You take them all, you take them all. Please, you are my Lord, you are my Lord, you are the Supreme Lord. And Krishna said, no, you keep them. That's all right. He actually, at first Krishna didn't say anything. And he said, Krishna, I've committed an offense to you. Punish me or forgive me, but please do not ignore me. And Krishna said, it's all right. And then Nanda Maharaj and Krishna were led back along the tunnel, the channel, to Vrindavan, to the Yamuna. And then suddenly all the residents of Vrindavan were on the shore just lamenting. They were going mad, crazy, in their crying and separation from Krishna. Then all of a sudden, to the surface of the water of the Yamuna came Nanda Maharaj and Krishna. And all the residents of Vrindavan became filled with joy. They were so happy. They were unlimitedly happy. Because Krishna returned. Balaram immediately embraced Krishna. And Krishna immediately went to Mother Yasoda and circumambulated her and touched her feet. So in this way, and all the residents of Vrindavan, and one by one, came and congratulated Krishna, and they showed him so much affection. They were so happy. We have such a, our boy Krishna, our boy, was so wonderful. He's just so wonderful. Another wonderful thing he's done. They were thinking it was our boy. Like when you meet someone from Bhopal, or Indore rather. If you meet someone from Indore, you know, there's a shared thing. You talk the same language, you know this place, you know that place. So there's a feeling of mamata, of special affection when you meet someone from your village or something. So the residents of Vrindavan, he's one of us. They have that feeling about Krishna only and always. So much love. Oh, Krishna is so wonderful. And the next day, all Nanda Maharaj was telling his friends about what had happened. They asked him, what was it like? You were down in the water for so long. What was it like? So he began telling them everything that happened. And, oh, but I don't want to tell you that today. We'll wait for tomorrow for that next part of the story, which is pastime, which is so wonderful. It's so wonderful. Oh, it is so wonderful. I cannot say it is more wonderful or less wonderful than what we heard, but all I can say, it is so wonderful. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? So, it is a good pastime. You like to see Nandagat village? Would you like to? It's opposite from across the Yamuna from Bandiravan.
Is it Balavraj Mandir?
If they go there, it is. If they don't go there, it isn't. It's not as far as Ramagat.
Did the servants of Varuna actually, how come they came like that one time? Did they sort of patrol or something?
How they work, how their consciousness is hard to understand, obviously. Like the Yamadutas, how do they know when someone's dying? You know, they have a book, they have their master, and he's connected to everything in a very subtle way. To their particular field, like Indra's connected to clouds and the weather and the rain in a subtle way. And Varunadeva is connected to all watery things in a subtle way. And yeah.
I always thought he had to do with the ocean, I guess.
Varuna's water.
He was a very wise of the ocean.
But how all these subtle things work is very hard to understand. If you want to understand it, you have to become Lord Brahma.
I heard Prabhupada saying that when the living entities fall from the heavenly planet, they fall in the form of rain.
Yeah. That's
a given considerable sentence for rain.
But if you think about it, it's spirit souls inside the raindrops. That's easier to think about. But that's also in the that's Vedic. That's straight out of the Vedas. That's how the process of falling takes place.
Very mysterious.
Very mysterious.
Then they grow as grass.
Huh?
And they grow as grass.
And then they get eaten by. And they, do they take their homeopathic medicine on time?
It's very extraordinary when you think how we think of ourselves that we might have been grasped once.
You're not your body.
Yeah.
Huh?
If the soul is powerful as 10,000 suns, it could be in a little blade of grass.
Yeah.
Well, how about in a mouse?
Mouse's
body too. Huh?
This mouse can run around. Grass can stand there and get snowed.
But there's obviously different levels of consciousness in different bodies.
I was hearing today too that when you said Lord Brahma, that there's Lord Brahmas that have got millions of heads.
And no anxiety in any of them. Okay. Right. A little late. Tomorrow, Krishna willing, we will not have a delayed beginning. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai, Nanda Baba ki jai, all of his blessings ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gopinath ki jai, Sri Mona Chai ki jai, Sri Jiva Goswami Pada ki jai.